If you're a physician who wants more autonomy in how you practice or fulfillment in your life, you're in the right place. This is the Change Physician Podcast, where our guests reveal how you can learn the mindsets, skills, and strategies to create the life you want without selling out your morals or values. But before we begin, I want to remind you of the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you at thechangephysician.com.
All right. Well, hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Change Physician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Kukar, with my co-host, Dr. Melissa Cady, and our returning guest, Dr. Eric Tate. And we had to get Dr. Tate back on because not only is he one of our favorite individuals, but he's got what I called him earlier, a beautiful brain. This is a brain that is thinking, that is, and most importantly, thinks in new and different ways. It has escaped sort of the bounds of the traditional physician mindset. He somehow broke through that very early on. And so what I wanted to talk today about was this concept called capital, because we had introduced that in an earlier discussion when we were talking about passive income and income streams and developing, you know, anything that you can do that's outside of your labor capital. And I thought it was intriguing enough when I started Googling it. If you Google what is capital, you get these things like, well, how to raise money for your startup. Most physicians aren't startup entrepreneurs, but we do have more capital than people realize, particularly when we're talking about different categories. So we had to get you on to discuss those. So Eric, thank you for coming back on to the Change Physician Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate being back on. Kind of love the last couple of podcasts that we did together. So Kevin and Melissa, thank you again for having me. And this is kind of my wheelhouse in terms of talking about investment and money and finances and really kind of psychologically how you think about these things to improve your life, right? Because, you know, we don't do all this stuff just to do it. I mean, there's a fulfillment aspect of it, of course. But I always believe that if you're getting up and working every day, the money that you earn should make your life better. And I think that too many people put it off somewhere into the far future. And if we've learned nothing from COVID, is that none of us are promised tomorrow. So the quicker that we can turn what we earn into a lifestyle enhancer, the better in my book. So this is, I love talking about this this subject. And so if we're going to talk about capital, I'm not going to give a textbook definition per se, but just from a colloquial kind of thinking about it, the term capital tends to be used in the context of investing. So it doesn't matter the source, but it's usually capital is going into an investment or a business of some kind to help it grow. And you either get an ownership stake from it, or you're getting an interest payment on the debt side of it. So that's just kind of, if we look at it from a colloquial standpoint, you know, you earn money, but it may not be called capital unless you're putting it into something that is productive. And usually capital is talked about in kind of the private space, right? Because you put money into a 401k, you're not talking about really putting capital. You're just, hey, I'm investing in a 401k. But when you went and looked online, you saw venture capital. That is money going into a startup business that is going and employing people and doing these things in a much more direct route, oftentimes in an earlier stage and things of that nature. But to talk about it, before we started recording, I just jotted down some notes around capital to get people to begin to think about it from the standpoint of where it can come from in your own life to enhance your life. And kind of the five things I just kind of rattled off were, one, kind of what we're all used to, getting up and going to a job every day and the excess capital above what it costs us to live in terms of our basic expenses. And so even the money you put into a 401k or an IRA is technically capital. You've just chosen to allocate it into that specific way, right? Number two would be kind of money you earn from your investments. So actual money that comes back to you, tangible money that comes back to you, is capital that you can then use for something else. There is such a thing as a capital gain, which is just the increase in price of an asset. So if you own stocks and you see it go up in price, that technically is a capital gain, but that is not capital you're going to use for something else because it's not coming to you. It's not realized at that point. It just kind of sits there and it may continue to go up in price, but it's not capital you can then allocate to something else until you sell that asset. And so that's the big difference between kind of income and capital gains. One is realized, one is on paper until you sell the asset to realize that gain and then get the capital back in your hands. Next would be credit. I know lots of doctors kind of go down the Dave Ramsey path and are scared to death of credit, but most of the world's wealthy use credit, and they use credit to get wealthy. So they use credit to buy things that generate a profit, generate income, generate capital gains. And of course, the imprudent use of credit can cause a problem, but the prudent use of credit can accelerate your investing world, especially in a world, we can get a little kind of esoteric, in a world where lots of dollars are being created, the value of those dollars are going down. And so by borrowing, what you're doing is taking future dollars, pulling them into today, buying assets today, and then paying them back over time with devalued dollars. So credit is actually a way to hedge dollars and inflation. But again, that's an advanced topic, 202. We won't talk about it on this podcast. Next is knowledge. Knowledge is capital. You can put together a project. You can become part of a larger project where you get equity just by the knowledge that you have. People will bring you in as an advisor. Like I sit on a lot of advisory boards for banks and for startup companies that we may have invested in. And I get equity for doing that because of the knowledge that I have. And so knowledge can turn into capital for you if you use it in the right way and in a way that people value. And then you also know to ask for it as well. And then the last thing we talked about is relationships, right? Relational capital, same issue. If somebody knows you and knows that you're kind of a good person or and can be helpful, your relationships, the people, the Rolodex that you have is a form of capital because people can then lend money to you. You can get people to invest in your ideas. And so, you know, those five things, earned money, money from investments, credit, knowledge, and relationships are kind of five things when I think about capital kind of extemporaneously come to mind is what people already probably have, but may not be leveraging in a way that is most effective for them.
You know, and I really like that because if you think about those five categories, you know, we're specifically talking about physicians, but really if you are in a free country or as free as it can be, every individual should have access to those in some way, shape, or form. Obviously, depending on what your starting resources are and obviously what your socioeconomic status is, but there's a potential there for everybody to develop an income stream, through that income stream, to develop an investments, to have the opportunity to apply leverage and capital through loans or borrowing. To develop knowledge capital is we all have an opportunity to do that, again, depending on time. And then lastly, that relationship capital. So I really like how you broke that down because they're very applicable to everyone in this country and certainly more applicable maybe to a physician at the start, but everybody can think this way. So love that breakdown.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those things that a lot of it is just a change in, as we always get back to when we have our conversations, it's just a change in mindset on the resources that we all have around us. It's interesting. I look at the world through an entrepreneur's lens, which means I see opportunity everywhere, more opportunity than I could ever take advantage of. And some of that is just an orientation mindset. And what that means is trying to figure out a way that you can help others and add value to others. If you decenter yourself from, I won't say your existence, but if you decenter yourself from the world in some ways and look at the world through the eyes of what people need, there's a way, and then take the resources that you have to then solve their need problem. There's way more opportunity than most people could ever wrap their arms around.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when you see that opportunity that you're speaking of, obviously acting on it, not just thinking about it, is a critical piece, but it also makes me think about this idea of movement. Like you talked about all these different types of capital, but they can be all, that can all be interplayed obviously with one another. They're not just, you know, siloed into one thing. You create the money, you're at a job, you take that money, you maybe buy a house, you have enough equity in the house, you get a home equity line of credit, you can utilize that credit, you can take that money, do flipping a house, and then have that capital that you've gained, and then you can turn it into another flip. Some of that of which I've had some experience doing, it's so much fun. But if you don't move the money, if you don't move the capital, if you don't curate the relationships to enable the opportunity that you probably wouldn't have seen without that relationship, then, you know, the being stagnant as a physician and not looking for opportunities and investing your time and money or resources, you're not going to be able to create wealth. I mean, you have anything to say about that?
So, well,
you can go in many directions, but
no, I'm going to give you my today, what I did today right before I came on here. And we're going to walk through those five steps just in the meeting I had today. But the first thing is the great thing about us as being physicians is because of our income, if we work long enough, we'll all be comfortable. Okay. Define how comfortable is, meaning none of us should be paupers in our old age, even if we just stuffed money under a mattress. So we'll just say there, right? Nobody has to do anything to be comfortable. You just have to work, put your nose to the grindstone for 30 years and call it a day. So let me be honest and lay that out there, right? But if you're trying to do something earlier, if you're trying to do something faster, if you're trying to get more freedom at an earlier age when you're still relatively young, then yes, you can't. It's called currency for a reason. And there's a long kind of esoteric essay around why money is called currency and that currency must flow and why maritime laws kind of tied up into the banking system and all these other kinds of things. You can go down the YouTube rabbit hole if you like, but money has to move, right? It's the reason why you give to charities. It's the reason when money becomes stagnant, it stops and less of it flows to you easily. And that's just kind of a mystical, metaphysical kind of understanding of money that many ancient cultures had around it. So yes, money does need to move. But talking about the capital and the action, right? The money moves when you take the action and aren't fearful. I tell people all the time, as physicians, we can always make more money. Money is not talismanic. It's not special. It can be destroyed and you can make more of it. It's fungible. So as long as you've got labor ability, you can always make more. So don't be afraid. I mean, don't be reckless, but don't be afraid to try new things, right? And especially when we're talking about these investment kinds of things, because the tax code is written in such a way outside of the stock market that if you lose money in these private projects, it's a capital loss. As long as you keep investing, when you have a capital gain, it will wipe out that capital loss. Again, I'm not an accountant, talk to your accountant, but as long as you stay in the game, all you lose are opportunity costs. You don't actually lose the nominal value of the money, because when you do make the money, it's going to take, those losses will cover that. So as an aside, we'll take that down. And so today I had a meeting with one of my partners, one of my real estate partners. So we own a lot of light industrial real estate, probably 500,000 square feet. So, but my partner knows a lot of other people. And so he had me meet with a company that does kind of medical ancillary services, kind of infusion therapy, all this kind of stuff, right? And the gentleman is potentially looking to bring on private equity partners and looks to, and wants to expand and wants a, and wants strategic kind of investors. And because we have an investment firm and we have a lot of physician investors, you know, I get these meetings all the time, right? And so because my partner knew that I had knowledge and relationships, he called me into this meeting to potentially put together a partnership with this company, because I know a lot in the healthcare space. I've invested a lot in the healthcare space, right? And so that's, you know, number four, number five, right there, just on knowledge and relationships. I'm brought into this project, which then I will allow our investors potentially to take part of and all these kinds of things. Potentially, I wouldn't have to put any money out of my pocket to do that necessarily, or create that, or he would give us some equity ownership for doing that. And then, you know, because I'm a physician, because when I was working full-time, I invested in hospices, I invested in all these different ancillary services. So the earned income went and made money and lost some money in those deals as well. So, you know, nothing is 100%. I had already had the action and the experience from that standpoint. And we even talked about it from a credit standpoint, right? We can actually put together debt for him potentially, right? You don't have to go to a bank to get debt. We can structure a project where investors get a nice kind of interest rate return from that standpoint at a higher rate, because they're taking less risk than potentially on the debt side, right? And so literally today, in the last 4 hours, I used all five of these things just in thinking about how to put together and work together a potential project. And so, but that's because people know, when people know you have knowledge and think in this particular way, they will call you and invite you to things. So you have to take the action. People have to understand that you're taking the action. And when you take action, more action comes to you. It's just one of those kind of mystical things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree.
But that, you know, that makes a lot of sense from a number of different standpoints, because we're looking at sort of these five synergistic buckets that kind of fit together that you can apply at very, and I'm kind of thinking a different, your career path. So, you know, residents coming out and God knows how much they're in debt now, whatever the absurd amount of term it is, 300. I mean, the worst I knew about in my medical school was like 500,000+. Mm-hmm. But they're coming out with a lot of debt. So they're thinking, well, there's nothing I can do. Well, then I'm thinking, but you can develop that relationships and you have your knowledge. So even though you're doing residency, you have a specialized set of knowledge that a that not everyone in the population has. And if you can then develop your knowledge and your relationships, they may not think that, you know, they may be, oh, I got all this debt, you know, all this debt. But if you are still really working hard on developing those relationships and continuing your medical knowledge and your knowledge of other fields, that's something you can do very early on in your career path to kind of amplify those buckets.
Absolutely. You just have to think about who needs your knowledge and is willing to pay for it.
So, you know, and so I'd like to kind of delve into that because you are straddling these two different worlds, right? So you are in the medical world and you have expertise there. And then you have this, the business, I'm using that as sort of a global tier because it's beyond simply real estate. You are not just real estate. It is business and the relationships there. So when you got started and you're sort of developing that as your capital stream, what were the first steps that you started to take?
So, well, I knew in college I wanted to do the MD MBA, right? So I knew that kind of starting off, right? Because I knew I would have gaps on the business side that I assumed business school would fill. And what I mean by that is, you know, I was a biology major in college, went to medical school, and then 2 years into medical school, we went into business school, right? And so the thing that business school taught me, which you don't have to go to business school to learn, was how to read an income statement, balance sheet, and a cash flow statement, right? I tell people all the time, Khan Academy, go online, you can learn those things, right? And if you can learn those things and look at things side by side, you can look at trends over time, and then you can just begin to ask questions. Well, why is this happening this way? Why is this happening this way? Why is this happening this way? So anyone who is interested in business, just learn how to read an income statement, balance sheet, and cash flow statement, and how they interact with one another, okay? So that's number one. Number two, I was introduced to personal development fairly early. And what I mean by that is I'm a big conference and seminar guy. So, and I paid for mentoring. So when I wanted to learn real estate, I paid for a mentoring course, right? When I wanted to learn sales, I paid for a sales course. When I wanted to learn how to put together big projects, I paid a mentor to teach me how to do those things, right? And so when I want to learn something, I don't go back to formal education. I go and find people who have done it, who are then selling the knowledge. And then I go and make sure one that they actually have done it themselves. So they're not giving me book knowledge. See, the problem in colleges and even in business school is you're getting a lot of book knowledge, but nobody who's actually had to make a payroll, right? And so I tell people all the time, don't talk to people about business if they've never had to make a payroll, because they really don't know what it's like to pull from a line of credit, to have to pay your people, to try to get it back and all of this, right? When you've had that kind of seat knowledge, life looks very different, because people will cut to the chase very quickly, and they will show you the things that work and not the things that don't work, right? I tell people all the time, you can either go and find a million people who didn't do it correctly, or go find the one person who did, because the one person who did cannot tell you it doesn't work. The millions of people who didn't, they can't tell you that it does work. They just theoretically does, but once you know it works, no one can tell you it doesn't work, right? And so to me, that is the biggest thing, is staying curious, but be willing to do personal development and conferences outside of just medical conferences if there's something you're interested in. Because the whole world runs on partnerships and helping one another, right? That's all business is. For those of us who came through the medical side, partnerships were cheating. You were taking a test. It was all you. It was all about your brain power, right? Business is nothing like that. Business was all group work, and you put together teams of experts. You didn't do it yourself, right? What did Henry Ford say? You know, he never wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. He's like, I don't need to know that stuff. I have people on this phone that I can call for any of these things that I ultimately need. And that's, physicians have to get into that mindset, that we do not need to do it all of ourselves, that we have to build teams around us with knowledge capital and relationship capital that will then further the things that we're trying to do. But it starts with the value that you're going to add, right? And so always come at it from, what value can I add with the knowledge that I've already paid for?
Yeah. And that always comes to bring us back to the idea of knowing your value and not doubting your value as a physician. I think there's, especially if it's outside that little scope of what you feel like you're the specialist or expert in. And I think that ties in well to even you talk about knowing to ask for equity in something that you are what seems like you're just being yourself and generous. And I'm kind of curious when you, I mean, you, it's obviously there's different personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you in a way where I know your value and you're able to ask for those things. But is there any advice you'd give to people that are diving into something new and or trying to get involved with some kind of business or group venture that they're not sure what to ask for?
Yeah, I'm always, now I won't say hesitant. I am always mindful of and always try to be cautious, because there's a mantra that's going around the physician world, know your worth, know your value, right? Know your worth, know your value, know your worth, know your value, right? Okay. Most of that is talking in the physician realm of being paid X, Y, or Z for doing something, okay? Fair enough, I understand. Know what your time is worth in terms of what you're willing to do or not do. But we all have to understand that, at least in a monetary sense, the market determines our worth and value. We don't. The market will tell you, hey, I'm gonna pay you for this or I'm not gonna pay you for this, right? And so in some ways, I've done lots of things that were for free, meaning I didn't get paid up front or there wasn't an equity to get the experience to put on the resume for the next thing that was going to be, right? And so sometimes you can know your worth right out of an opportunity. Sometimes you do have to work for free to get the experience, to really understand the nuances of an industry, to say, okay, well, I'm gonna take it on the chin on this one, but I'm going to at least learn, right? And then understanding your value vis-a-vis what someone else needs. Because value is, I mean, of course you value yourself from a self-esteem standpoint, but your value is relative to what it does for other people. Your value isn't wrapped up in who you are, except for you and your creator and maybe your parents and your children, right? So it's a fine line of understanding your worth, but when we're talking about it from a labor perspective, you know, labor is fungible. So you can say, well, I want X amount of dollars for X. Well, they're going to go get the other person down the street who's going to do it for less, right? And that's just the reality of certain things. And so once you've got to figure out the value that you're bringing that others cannot bring, or that is special to you and unique to you, which then gives you some leverage potentially. Now, I tell people all the time, ask, but don't demand. Ask for the equity stake if you want it, ask for X, Y, and Z. But if it's a breaking point and you really want to do this, sometimes you're going to take it on the chin on a deal, get the experience, put it on the resume, file it away and say, well, I will or won't do that again. Essentially, you're going to be learning on somebody else's dime from that standpoint, from there. But that whole know your worth thing, unless you value your free time more than the experience you would have doing this, sometimes you can value yourself right out of an opportunity because you place an overemphasis on who you think you are, but the market doesn't care who you are. The market cares about what you can prove and what you've done. And if you haven't done it before and don't have a track record, then the market's like, well, show me something. And sometimes you have to prove it first before your worth is going to be valued in the marketplace.
Yeah, that's a great point.
But it brings up a common theme again, is just being aware, right? Because so the difference here, and what I like how he said that, where it's ask but don't demand, is you have to be aware enough that there is some sort of value exchange. And I'm seeing it, as physicians, there's two different paths of danger. There's the know your worth, where we just demand, oh, I you're just going to pay me some obscene amount of money just because that's what I feel like I'm worth, right? And we've done a lot of training. Yeah. But just like you're saying, you got to look at the context and things like that. On the other hand, though, I do think that there are physicians that are very easy to take advantage of because they're not doing this with any awareness of intentionality. Yep. Meaning we oftentimes will go off and give, or someone will ask us to do something and we will do it without actually being aware of the full connotations of what that means. And what I'm saying is if there's a value exchange, as a physician, you should be cognizant of where that value is flowing. So if you choose to do something, you are aware, if you are donating your time, you're doing it because I've got the learning, I'm doing this, I'm benefiting these people, and I choose to do that. And I think that's probably where I would, the other extreme is, instead of the know your worth, is the people who will just bend over. And because we all know that, and some of us have maybe done that more than once. But how do you approach things intentionally? Like when you were first, you know, go back to young Dr. Tate coming out of school and intentionally creating the practice so that you have the time. how did you sort of approach these value exchanges when it came to, say, either knowledge or relationships where you were trying to prove this point, or it may be, I know every physician's out there is being asked to do a million things. No one will ever tell you that there's money involved unless you ask. So how are you making those determinations?
So it's interesting. And that's why I'm such a big personal development person. Any of my investors who I've had conversations with know that when we have the first phone call, I'm asking them kind of, what's your goal? What are you trying to accomplish? Right. I always knew from day one that I wanted time freedom. And so I wanted to be able to control my schedule, control my time as I saw fit. I didn't care about money. I didn't care, but money was a tool to do that. But I didn't care about, you know, making a gazillion dollars, making $1 billion. If I cared about that, I would have gone to Wall Street. I would have finished medical school, gone to Wall Street with the MBA and done that thing, right? And so my guiding star was always, how do I create a long-term kind of dividend cash flow stream, equity ownership that created long-term cash flow streams potentially, right? And so I've turned down millions of dollars of work where people would have just hired me for a fee to do X, Y, and Z, right? But I wasn't interested in that. So I could make the binary decisions very easily. Is this going to produce a long-term revenue and cash flow stream that I don't have to continuously work outside of what I'm normally doing to receive it? If it doesn't, I can just say no to it. If it does, okay, I may not get paid immediately, but will it give me an experience level that in the future I can then take and marry that to other opportunities that look just like this? And so that's why having a guiding principle and star of what you're trying to accomplish kind of in your life. And for now we can keep it just financially, but I always say that when you're financially independent, you can find all the fulfilling things you need in your life, right? That's kind of the predicate thing number one, right? So I always tell people, like, personal development, but then financial independence, because then you can figure out everything else when you have the time to sit and think. So for me, it was time. And because I always had that guiding star, I could pick and choose things and I could pick and choose opportunities based upon whether or not they were going to ultimately give me that time freedom or not. Because to me, just getting money didn't matter as much. What mattered to me was building something that could create long-term cash flow streams over time. And it's a nuanced thing, but you'll see that you can turn certain opportunities into a long-term cash flow stream if you restructure how people are presenting them to you, right? And that's why equity oftentimes is so important. Now, again, I'm not knocking debt, because debt is good too, but getting equity in things where people are trying to have you use your time, where they're asking you not to invest in something, but are saying, hey, come work here, come advise here, come do X, Y, and Z, where you are literally doing labor kind of time thing. Figure out if there's a way to turn that into a longer term kind of cash flow stream in terms of how you think about and how you structure what people are potentially offering you.
So if I can go a little bit deeper there, what does that look like? Like, what did that look like for your first, say, project when you were exiting residency? And I know for people who haven't gone through the first episode, I would really recommend it, because you were very intentional from the get-go and you started your practice and you worked part-time, which some people, you know,
I would say 80% time. So out of 5 days.
But you were intentional about that versus there's the other mantra of, go out and you're earning years and earn all this money so that you can then retire and, you know, control your time 10 years or whatever. But for you come in with this intention, you're doing 4 days a week. So what was the first vehicle, or what was that first sort of bucket of capital that you approached, and how did that look like?
So for me, it was kind of income producing real estate. So that was kind of the first bucket, because I don't invest in the stock market per se. Now, we own a bunch of private companies at Michael Public, but I don't do retail stocks from that standpoint. So I went to business school to learn how to invest my own money. And so we just, you know, started buying income producing real estate to start with as a base of kind of wealth, right? Because, you know, it's going to go up in price over time. The note's going to get paid down by other people. It generates cash flow, which means I don't have to work as hard. So that fifth day that I wasn't working still was generating income. It just wasn't for me having to work in it on a daily consistent basis. So that was the first thing. Then the next thing was, I bought into the hospital that I was affiliated with. You know, we can talk about the merits of that, good, bad, indifferent. If I had to do it over again, I made more money in the losses it has generated than actually making returns. Longer discussion for a different day. But what it did was, I'll give you the thought process around it. What it was doing was vertically integrating my revenue stream. So physicians are the last line in the revenue stream from healthcare, right? And so we get paid with what's left over on the professional side, but big money comes in on the insurance side, on the hospital side, on the facility side, and all of those kinds of things. So there are things like facility fees that physicians don't get and all these things. So what I was trying to do was, I was already doing a little bit of hospital work. I was already sending my patients to that facility. So I wouldn't be doing any extra work to potentially create income streams and an equity ownership piece. Okay. So that was vertically integrating the my work situation, which doctors do now with surgery centers and things of that nature, right? Less so than in the past, but I'm just giving you the thought process from that standpoint. And so once I had kids, I stopped moonlighting, because I used to moonlight, but there was no equity there. So I'd moonlight in these ERs and do this kind of stuff. So I'm not saying that I didn't work hard to create extra cash flow, but once kids came in, I was like, okay, priority shift, right? Like, all right, these kids are here now. I probably need to spend some time around there and what that's looking like. And so depending on where I was in life determined a lot of those kinds of things. Same thing with investing in surgeries, not in surgery centers, in sleep centers, in hospice. And then I would be a medical director as well. So they would pay me to be a medical director, which was fine. It was already within my wheelhouse of what I was doing as a physician from that standpoint. And then kind of a big one was, well, one of the Medicare Advantage plans came into the marketplace and was looking to partner with physicians kind of in a full risk contract. So they came to a group, the hospital was like, hey, we want to bring them on. Dr. Tate, you know, we've got some other docs who are interested as well. Hey, come together. You can be the president of this IPA and contract with them. And it made sense for me because I was already seeing those patients. So now again, I was able to move up the income level of healthcare to where the money immediately came in. I was already seeing the patients. So it was just another way that we could have a more integrated say in how the patients were treated, because I got to create the specialist group. So I knew which specialists did way too much on patients and were just padding bills versus those who knew how to actually take care of patients and were more conservative. So I could create kind of the bubble in which patients were going to be cared for. And we made more money if we kept the patients out of the hospital. So we were incentivized to get them in our offices, to get them in a specialist office, to keep them out of the hospital and keep them at home or keep them in physical therapy or all of those kind of things. So the incentives were all aligned. It was just a little bit of extra work for me. But in the end, I was doing it anyway to make a whole heap load more money, because now you're at the insurance level of where the money comes in. And whatever was left over at the end of every quarter, we split with the insurance company. So there were years I was making more money from that than I was making practicing medicine, right? And so it is those kinds of understanding of equity and ownership and integrating your labor so that the same labor you're doing, you can get paid two or three different times. That's just kind of the early phase of my career in terms of how I thought about my career. And again, most of that was not real estate related. Real estate was kind of in the background. That was just a thing that fed the beast and gave me some freedom and allowed me to be able to move from job to job as I saw fit and to control my schedule. But it wasn't the end all be all. We were still looking for other things to leverage our work.
You know, it's interesting you said about this opportunity to make, you know, money in three different places or three different ways off of, you know, that initial effort that you made. You know, it almost seems like it would be difficult to, I mean, unless you're like in a system and it's presented to you or it's offered to you, or it seems like it'd be hard for people to discover that, like outside of what they're doing, like finding those kind of opportunities. Or am I wrong? Is it something that you can seek out and find, or is it something you just kind of get embedded in a system and realize there's other opportunities within that system?
So it's action. Right. It always comes back to the same thing. Right. And yeah. So the CEO of the hospital, he and I were very close in terms of, you know, when they were bringing a hyperbaric center in. I was like, okay, I'll be a doc there, right? So I can do that kind of a half day, right? So as I was weaning out of the out of it, I was like, I'll do a half day in the hyperbaric chamber with wound care. And so I was a big supporter of the hospital and would talk to the hospital about marketing, would go out there and do things. So he saw my action, was like, oh, we have this opportunity, call Eric, right? And so back to the knowledge, back to the value add, but it made sense for me to do it because I was an owner in the hospital, right? Mm-hmm. And so all of these things still tie back together in terms of intentional action and adding value to others so that they see you and think of you when things come up. I tell people all the time when I'm kind of talking and mentoring, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. Who's going to say your name in rooms that you're not in, right? Mm-hmm. And thinks of you as an expert in X, Y, or Z, or somebody who's willing to do X, Y, or Z. Opportunities always seem to go to the busiest people. Notice how that happens.
Yeah, it's true. One last question for me on, you know, speaking that we're talking about, you know, what is capital and all these different categories. Do you ever think of being that the medical system has its own volatile nature and its complexities, do you feel like as an individual and cherishing autonomy and obviously wanting to make good choices for, investments, do you prefer to stay within, even as a physician, do you prefer to invest in medical related things or non-medical?
Mostly non-medical, unless they're, so here, all right, let me try to condense this as much as humanly possible. Non-medical, because I've done a lot of medical investing and it can be difficult. It can be difficult. Not saying, and again, it's easier for surgeons and people who do stuff to get into these streams. It's harder for cognitive-based physicians to get into these things because the way we're paid for what we do, it just doesn't translate out. So let's start there. On the medical side, if it's going to decrease costs, okay, or increase life expectancy, I'll look at it, all right? If that's just kind of the thing. The other issue is if it's an early situation in a new treatment model, because you've got 3 to 5 years in kind of healthcare to hit a code that's paying very well before they cut it. So you can't get in on late, you have to get in early on a trend, right? And I always say, don't get in on trends that are gonna change the way you practice. If it fits naturally within how you normally practice and it's an enhancement to what you're already going to do, look at it. If you are changing the way you practice to make money and it's not beneficial either by decreasing cost or increasing life, please don't do it. Please don't do it. And then I'm also kind of wary of the payment model changing in terms of fee-for-service going away at some point. So there's also that issue around there. But it also creates a situation where you are wildly concentrated in your income streams, right? If you're working in medicine and investing in medicine, you are single point failure in many ways. And so from a pure diversification standpoint, you can't, you know, to me, that would be way too concentrated in one specific industry that is probably outside of airlines, the most regulated industry in the country. And so a stroke of Congress's pen completely changes the model under which all of this stuff operates. And so to me, that is way too risky. And so I wouldn't put a ton of eggs in the medical basket, but having some exposure to what we do and what we understand, absolutely within a broad diversified portfolio of other types of things that all move you towards whatever your ultimate financial goal is. Because I don't believe in diversification for diversification's sake. I believe in diversification that moves you towards the specific goal that you're trying to achieve. So that's why I'm, you know, wildly concentrated in real estate, in kind of angel and venture investing, and in debt, right? They all will pay, or they'll have a very high rate of capital appreciation with relatively moderate risks on them. And so, but it all moves me towards my specific financial goal. Lots of people diversify just because they think it's a good thing, but don't intentionally or consciously diversify into the thing that's going to benefit their life today and in the future as well.
Nice. Nicely said. Kevin?
Yeah. Well, as always, there's like 100 million things we could talk about. And
we've used a lot of his time.
And we did. I was just looking at him like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we've already gone this long. We got to cut this off. But anyway, we will definitely have you back on again, Eric.
Absolutely. I'm
happy to have you at some point.
I'm always ready.
But no, thank you so much. And I just kind of make a really, really quick recap for the listeners here. So we're talking about capital as kind of this value producing assets. And what Dr. Tate has done is he broke that down into five different categories for us. You have your income stream, which we all know about, your investments, which are you kind of putting away for future income, the leverage or the borrowing aspect, which we sometimes negate, probably because some of us feel like we're being crushed under that rather than looking at it as that we're leveraging that knowledge or that investment in knowledge for future gain. We have the knowledge category and the relationship category for both capital buckets, which are both things to be more aware of, I think, in the physician space for certainly. Because I was thinking when your last example, when we were talking about action and the CEO of your hospital, I'm pretty sure that probably came out of some strong relationship capital that was demonstrated through your knowledge capital. And so that just seems to interplaying this knowledge and relationship capital, I think, ties all of these together. And I think you have definitely demonstrated that in many different ways. So
well, the interesting thing about those two is with those two, you don't actually need money. Mm-hmm. With knowledge and relationship capital, you can put things together where you can become an owner in things and you never have to put a dime up yourself if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it provides so many different non-monetary gains as well. Like a strong relationship network. You're thinking about the COVID situation, having those ties and having those relationships is good for health. Apparently it's good for wealth. So that's awesome. Anyway. All right. Well, we could be talking for hours and I know we got to cut this. So Melissa, is there any last words that you want to say here?
No, I almost like thinking of this episode as leveraging your life by merging your capital and, you know, putting it into motion. And I think, you know, you've all said, you know, summarize these things really well, but I definitely wanted to remind people to check out episode 4. He was one of our early interviewees with Eric Tate's story. And he had a follow-up one on episode 8 for a Black physician's view of many things in this country, in this world, and in medicine. Wonderful episodes. And of course, we're looking forward to maybe future ones as well. So thank you again, Dr. Eric Tate, for joining us. And for those of you listening, I'm Dr. Melissa Cady, joined by my co-host, Dr. Kevin Kakaro, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for joining us today on the Change Physician Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please let us know by going to thechangephysician.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you simply by joining the community at thechangephysician.com.